As listeners to this podcast know, TSIA is committed to helping technology companies separate the hype from the reality when it comes to the impact of AI on how tech companies operate. Today, we will be clicking into how AI can be leveraged to scale customer success activities and create better customer experiences. And we will be having this conversation with one of the leading AI providers on the planet. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Today, I will be having a conversation with David Judge, Senior Director of Customer Success at Microsoft, and we will be exploring how Microsoft is leveraging AI internally within their customer success function. So let's get the insight engine humming here. David, welcome, and let's open up. Can you provide an overview of your responsibilities at Microsoft?
Sure. They actually recently changed my title, Thomas, so I'm a General Manager now of Global Customer Success at Microsoft.
Nice.
So I'm responsible for a number of functions across that customer success business for us. So I focus on our customer success account managers as a community and how they execute with excellence.
Okay.
And this is across all of our Azure clouds, as well as our modern work security and business applications. So we call that our sort of commercial product suite. So as you know, Microsoft's one of arguably the largest, if not one of the largest customer success organizations on the planet. So we're serving over a billion customers across that folks in the field.
Yep, fantastic. I was going to ask, what product lines you were involved with there. So we've got that on the table. And we're going to get right into it because I'll tell you, honestly, we've been documenting AI use cases, within tech business models. And, there's a lot of great examples in education services and support and managed services and operations. But, I will tell you, I've got a couple on customer success, but it's been kind of lagging as a function that's really leaning into AI. So that's why I was really anxious to get you on Tectonic to talk about that. And I want to start, first of all, how long ago did Microsoft start exploring how AI could help in terms of scaling CS?
For as long as we've had a customer success business. So by the way, I really like what you said before around the pragmatic end of AI. There is a lot of enthusiasm around the technology and the capabilities. There has been for decades, arguably. But right now, and I've been in the AI space for long enough that we've seen some of the ebb and flow around what's been possible versus what's actually real.
Yeah.
I would argue that we are truly in a new moment where there's far more real now than was ever previously possible.
I agree.
And it's not as brittle as it used to be, where you'd have lots of things stacked on top of each other. It wasn't flexible at all. So if you put that in the context of, how a customer success organization needs to work with their customers, there's more opportunities now than ever before to be able to leverage these new capabilities. So if you somewhat helpful to think around the opportunity space around what's already been in place around data and the foundation of data that leads to predictive capabilities, then turn into good next best actions across multiple different moments for the customer. But now with the advent of what we're doing around Copilot and large language models in particular, you have much more opportunity to do things at the face of the customer relative to their own interactions with you. So you'd mentioned support. We've had a huge use case across the support business, which really is a part of customer success, arguably, where if you have thousands and thousands to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of interactions with that customer, being able to keep track of who they are and what they care about and be able to make sure that you've got very fast and frictionless interactions across that creates a bunch of efficiency for the customer. So it's a better experience for them, but it's also a better experience for the internal folks inside of the customer success organization as they're interacting with that same customer. So we kind of think from the traditional back office or back of the house support interactions all the way to the most advanced technical or domain specific interactions with the customers that you can have. AI plays a role across all of those in varying degrees.
Yes, I want to click into some of the specific use cases for the audience. And if I play back what you said there, in a sense, Microsoft has been shipping on this for a long time in terms of ever since customer success was created, you've been looking at the tools that you could leverage in AI. And to your point, we're having a moment here where some of these AI capabilities really are going, quote, below the waterline. So you can leverage them. They're real. And I completely agree with that. I'll just make a side comment. I was reading a Wall Street Journal article and the headline was that companies were questioning the value of, they bought Copilot licenses for everybody and they're not sure what the ROI is. And, my argument on this podcast has been, that's not the winning use case. You don't just take Copilot and throw it out there in a wild and say, well, gosh, I hope people get some value. You pick specific workflows that you know you now can influence with these new tools. And so let's anchor on that. So let's start with, what are the best use cases you've seen for AI? And as you described, all the way from the back office to the front facing the customer, what are some of the real winning use cases?
It's low-hanging fruit to look at scaled interactions. So the support business is the support aspects of, so customer has trouble with the technology or customer has a question that they need to ask. This is really low-hanging fruit from an AI use case perspective. So particularly as you scale that up, we ourselves have started to leverage that technology at scale across those interactions. So there's been, a 32% increase in self-service usage. That's customers just getting the answer without ever needing to go to a person. 20% decrease in misroutes, getting to the right person at the right time for the right reason. And then all of this turns into better and faster resolution rates across those same customer interactions. So that just drives customer sat all the way up.
Yep.
Because in that moment, you've got a customer that's having a problem. They need to get something solved. They want to try to solve that as quickly as possible. So that's a pretty easy one to understand. Now I would
just pause on that one. That is a common one I've heard across other TSI members, the self-service aspect. I mean, if you think about the traditional, self-service portal, knowledge management, trying to get the answer to the customer, hey, I asked my question, hopefully I get the right... These models just take that to a whole nother level. And so you said a 32% increase in self-service, right? The fact that people, let's just pause on that. Because if you think historically, hey, I'm going to Six Sigma the shit out of my, self-service process, right? And I'm just going to really work it and get it. And if you had like a 5 or 10% improvement in self-service, you'd be high-fiving, right? And these AI use cases that we keep finding, the numbers are never 5 or 10%. It's always 30, 40, 50. So 32%, right, increase in self-service. That is phenomenal. That use case right there is phenomenal. And as we click into that one, I just have to ask, because I'm sure some people, if they're not as far down the path here, they're going to say, okay, so how hard was it to get your data house in order, your knowledge house in order to feed that? Can you just kind of put a little bit, color commentary on that?
Every customer is going to be a little bit different. Every starting point is going to be a little bit different. We do always advocate that, listen, you're going to have a better time if you've got at least a good strategy around your yep. data and your knowledge management in advance of that. Garbage into these systems tends to lead to garbage out.
Yep.
Or worse, incorrect answers with authority, which is not a great
outcome. Yep. Garbage with authority. Okay.
Yeah. So having a strategy around that, I would say a strong suggestion to have that, because otherwise your path will typically take you through that before you hit the end result. There's also been an overinclination to say, I've got to get everything perfect yeah. before I go and get started, which I think is also the wrong yeah. instinct. Like in some cases, it's better to start to experiment and to get mm-hmm. going and then scale with success, because your customers are going to tell you whether or not you're on the right path mm-hmm. or not. And they're going to vote with their activities. Yeah. We started to see this, a huge increase in self-service. One of the beauties of these types of interactions is that you take the complexity off of the end mm-hmm. user. You take it off of yeah. them and you actually give it to both the system and to the back-end supporting aspects of this. We look at the sort of history of IVRs mm-hmm. and self-service portals, and a lot of that was sort of around training you to hit the right numbers at the right time to get to the person that you're trying to get to. Whereas in some of the new models now, it's much more conversational, it's much more immediate, and it's much more valuable in its response. So one of the things we did was we certainly looked at, hey, where's some authoritative sources of knowledge? Make sure you know where that is. And then the models can actually be trained on top of that to be able to provide some really great outcomes. And then to be able to build trust around it, you can also have the human in the loop in your support organizations or even in your customer success side of this, where they're helping to double check. So even so, much faster, much, much better outcome for the customer much more quickly. Yep. And you can grow and learn from those use cases.
In terms of the knowledge sources, I was doing an education services use case. And, what really struck me there is they were building, using AI to create content, right? Training materials. Is you can feed product manuals, you can feed presentations from other subject matter experts, right? So the field of play gets a lot larger. So I'm curious, as you're feeding these large language support models, was that the same motion? Were you able to draw from more sources than you traditionally did, or how did that work?
You can go wider for sure. So you can start looking at product and technical documentation. It's quite effective in many of those yeah. cases. So again, many queries even that come to frontline CSMs or customer success account managers, as we call them, are, hey, how do I find right. this? Where do I go for that? Right. Like, what does this mean? How are these things connected? And in a lot of ways, the new generation of these language models and co-pilots, as we build them, are very adept at being able to synthesize across those different places. So again, getting authoritative around what are some of those sources you want to trust and make sure that they're valid, and then putting them in one place where you can help to draw across those. But you know, most customers don't think, hey, I got to go here for this or there for that. We don't want them to have the cognitive burden. They have to train themselves how to get through our systems. It's much better for them to have a single place to go to and ask a simple question, get a straight answer.
Makes sense. So obviously self-service is a winning use case. What other use cases have you been applying AI to?
So certainly the virtual agent / co-pilots, as we use them, we look at these across a few different levels. So I'm personally using it every day now because it's baked into our Teams platforms inside of our Outlook platforms, and every single person in the company gets the benefit of this. So one of the things I personally love to do is I use it to mine just my own interactions with mm-hmm. customers and with my own teams. You know, what have we talked to across Teams? What have we talked about across Outlook? I use it very frequently, both transcribe previous conversations and to pull out action items. So I don't take notes anymore, hardly at all. And by the way, this is a benefit that we give to all of our customer success account managers too, is they have these meetings through these capabilities. The burden of having to remember absolutely everything, or, hey, what did I talk about then? And where's this file there, starts to reduce a lot.
Can we just pause on that one? Because I don't know how ubiquitous that use case has become, you know, in the industry, but I want to pause on it because I'll give you my personal experience with that use case. So for TSIA, our customer success folks will do what's called a vision and strategy call with a member, right? You sit down and you basically say, hey, you joined this research area. What are you trying to, you know, blah, 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 right? And at the end of that, so let's say it's a 45-minute call. You have, you know, all these notes that they've taken. They then write that up and say, here's our action plan. Here's what we talked about. Here's recommended, you know, all that stuff, right? I just had one of these calls last week. It was a 45-minute call. I took the transcript from Teams. I put it into an AI model and I said, give me the executive summary. I want to know what we talked about and I want to know what the action items are, et cetera. And in seconds, it generated that report, right? And I sent it to the executive who runs customer success. And I said, to your point, we should be done taking notes. You know, the researchers, the customer success managers, we should be basically just recording these, getting the transcript, and boom. I mean, that is hundreds and hundreds of hours that just came off the table. It's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. And that simple use case right there, which is a great one for customer success, because you're always interacting with the customer. You're trying to capture, you know, what's important, you know, how can you help them, and you're always writing down notes and you miss something or whatever. And then all of that just goes, boom, off the table. Let the technology be your friend. So how common do you think that is out there in the industry right now? Are people still just now realizing that they don't have to take notes anymore?
I think people are waking up to the, you know, there's a shine to a certain amount of number of like super fancy use cases that people want to focus on, but it's these prosaic ones, these like more simplified ones that work just really well. Are they going to be the ones that start to catch fire more often? Like, we share prompts for Copilot around my team and with the field they can use, because again, we have Copilot on every desk across the company at this point, and particularly every desk interfacing with customers. So, you know, it's very common inside of our own world. And we're advising customers that are also in this similar circumstance, because Copilot's been, you know, scaling aggressively with our customers that are using Teams, using Modern Work, using Outlook, using Biz Apps, using security products. So it's early days, I think, in people catching on to a lot of this.
I think so too.
But once you start to notice the benefit that it has, to your point, it'll be unimaginable to think about back.
Oh, no, trust me, man. Already just the way I do my job writing papers, I can't go back to not having a tool to help me there. Let's click into the prompt engineering, because I think this is something, again, that is probably nuanced for a lot of people. They say, okay, I've heard of this thing called, you know, prompt engineering. But to put, again, this mundane use case, you can take a transcript from a call and you can throw it into an AI tool. And depending on how you prompt it, it's going to drive the quality of that output, right? You know, how you ask for that executive summary, what you ask it to do, you could either get a sort of okay summary or you could get a killer summary. That is what we're talking about here, the prompt, right? The quality of that. And so tell me a little bit more, because you said, you know, we're sharing prompts, because that's what happens, right? People learn, hey, this prompt really works well on getting executive summary. This prompt, not so much. So is that a centralized database? Do you have a team that is curating those for you? How do you basically build that muscle of effective prompts?
Well, the good news is that across Copilot, a lot of the prompts can be quite natural. Like you just ask for something and then you can build on the thing that you asked for before. And what happens is most people create sort of a short list of things that they find very useful. And typically what they do is they start sharing it with friends and then it spreads.
So organic.
It's organic to some degree, which is amazing, right? Because you start to see emergence of some of the really best prompts start to bubble up and then people start to notice and then they're sort of everywhere. Now that said, you know, Copilot will remember the prompts that you've used in the past, so it's not having to type it in every time. There's shorthands to it. It's also quite flexible in sort of understanding what your intent is versus having to type it out exactly, which is one of the big differences between sort of a prompt versus having to code something to actually get it.
Right.
So we are asking the field to share and share with us and share with each other some of those best prompts. And then customers come up with great use cases all the time. We've started to understand a little more around those prompts. Like something super simple, and I use this one frequently, is trying to figure out where a file is and when it might have been sent to me. So I would write in, send me a bulleted list of all of the files that Thomas has sent to me over the past 180 days, cite the source, and give me a link. And that's across everything, by the way, that's inside of the sort of knowledge platforms. And that alone just saved me 15 annoying minutes of trying to track something down and ultimately got me to productivity a little bit faster. So we multiply that out across thousands of people and thousands of similar examples, and you get there a lot.
Yeah, you just gave me a use case, which I'm going to onboard, and that is working through my email queue is always a huge pain in the ass, and I can't find one, you know, and so I know they sent that to you. So it's the ability to just go at that in a way more effective way. I'm loving that. So I'm curious, you know, on the customer success side of it, because you're in Azure, so you're driving workload, you want to get customers to expand. Understanding the customer's needs, the readiness to expand, what the, you know, what they should be using. Is there any way that you're leveraging AI to help the CSMs from that perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So it's a combination of data-driven. We get a ton of telemetry out of the platforms, as you'd expect. We can see how things are going, things out, you know, usage patterns and things that occur around all of the platforms that we leverage. So rather than, again, similar concept here, rather than having the customer success leader in the field, be it a technical one or be it a more techno-functional one, have to hunt around inside of a bunch of core systems, we're bringing those things to them as saying, here's some insights about your customer. And here are some recommended next actions that you should be taking with them to be able to drive them either to better outcomes more quickly, because every customer has their own business case too. There's a reason why they went with Microsoft around Azure or modern work, security, biz apps. So helping them to be just a little bit faster to get to those outcomes really matters to us. So those nudges to the field based off of that data has been really important for us. And then similarly, we are also focused on their operating and technical health. So strong foundations create for happier customers and customers that get more predictable outcomes. So understanding some of the great data that we're going to see both from their architectures, whether or not they're well architected and resilient, but also their support patterns of, hey, where's this been troublesome for them in the past? Summarizing those insights and then, again, driving action from some people that work with the customers at the face of the customer to help them get there.
So it's sort of the predictive support model in terms of we're going to predict where there are problems here based on what we've got coming in here so we can get ahead of that with the customer technically. I want to go back to the nudge piece of it in terms of aggregating insights for a customer success manager to say, hey, here's where you can help this customer get an outcome. I have this belief, I'd be curious what your thoughts are. You know, we had this, the era of what I'll call dashboards, right? Where we all had a dashboard. And so maybe you'd have your CSM go, we'll go to this dashboard and the customer's, you know, red, yellow, green or whatever. And you know, we sort of had to count on not only the dashboard being good, but also we had to count on that employee leaning into that, right? And I believe we're getting to a world where we don't need employees to go check dashboards because literally, the technology is going to say, hey, John, this is what you need to do with customer A today. don't check the dashboard. Here's the recommendations. And I think, by the way, I think that train is coming to salespeople. You know, hey, you know, Susie, this is who you should be talking to today. This is the opportunity. It's not going to be you guessing. It's not going to be you checking, again, dashboards. I'm curious your thoughts on that evolution of what you're seeing there.
So I agree with you that we're heading in that direction. What we're finding in practice is that the nudge is very effective and sort of the next best action recommendation is very effective It is most effective when we give them some understanding and some argumentation about why.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Context.
Like, people need to understand. Like, so just say, hey, go do this. And they're like, I don't know if this matches up with my understanding of
it. Yeah.
So we need to give them the argumentation around, hey, well, we're seeing this, we're seeing that. We think that this is probably the next best action for you.
Yeah.
And by the way, help us understand if this is true or not so that we can actually help the models get a little bit better the next time we make a recommendation. So, you know, if you extrapolate this out over a sufficient time scale, I think we're heading much more in that direction. But, you know, we're working with people and people are working with people on the customer side. So they need to have the help and the confidence that that's correct and can help have those conversations.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. And so that kind of leads to this question I have around just adoption, employee adoption. So obviously, you know, you're sitting here at Microsoft, you're making the technology, you say, hey, our employees are going to be super jazzed about it. So yes, they're going to adopt it. But I would bet a dollar that even within Microsoft, you still have to navigate this fact that just because the technology is there doesn't mean, like you just said, you might have a wicked smart CSM or support engineer who says, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I don't need the best action from this piece of software, right? So tell me a little bit about how you drive successful adoption of the tools.
If we think about sort of the insights aspect of this, it's important because the better insights get better adoption.
Yeah.
Like if you and max the best actions that match up with their realities get better adoption and then start to trust a little bit more. So we like to think about the what, like sort of the map of the territory. Like we've got to have a consensus reality around what the data is telling us. There needs to be like a so what after that. Like what do we do now? Like it matters. And then the now what is ultimately where we want those folks to live, which is taking action on what those what and so whats are telling them probably is the case that needs to happen. So listen, it's a trust building exercise. It's also making sure that we're creating a continuous learning organization. You would have seen this in a lot of what we talk about publicly, that we have a learn-it-all culture, not a know-it-all culture. So we work with people to make sure that they're thinking in a very progressive way how they're going to start to adopt new technologies continuously. And think about it. Think like, what's the art of the possible around this? With that breeds, you know, enthusiasm. It provides energy for the field. It also provides energy for our customers because we're, you know, we're consuming some of the great things that we're asking them to go consume as well. So I think it's a little bit of both. It's being rigorous around how the data turns into action and how we use that technology, but then making sure we've got a field and an organization that's continuously learning about how to do more.
Yeah. I mean, I have this, I call this the AI mantra for all, you know, tech professionals today. And I really believe this is true. And I think that if you're in the technology industry, when it comes to AI, I think that your, you know, mantra has to be, look, AI may or may not replace my job. I mean, that's just a reality. It may or may not, but it's definitely going to re-engineer my job. So I don't care what you're doing. If you think that somehow you're immune to your workflows changing, that like, hey, I'm not really going to be, that's, you know, okay, the support engineers are going to be impacted or these people are, but I'm in finance or I'm in marketing or I'm whatever. It's not, I mean, I think you really do have to lean into it because again, we're talking 30, 40, 50%, you know, benefit here in workflows and you just can't not be part of that. You just can't ignore that. So, you know, I think it becomes important. I want to ask you about sort of measuring impact and success. You put this 32% number on the table. That's a hard, you know, benefit of AI. How else do you quantify? Because I'll go back to that Wall Street Journal article, right? People are going, well, I don't know. I got these tools. I don't really know. But again, my experience is it's because they just kind of have this shotgun approach and they're not really saying, here's the workflow I applied it to. Here's the benefits. I'm tracking that. So how do you go after that to make sure you really can quantify the benefits?
So I would probably combine together the measure and the method a little bit here. So we are continuous about trying to both learn from as well as roll out new improvements. I think it really benefits from a super agile approach. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, you have to have the foundations in place and then you can build upon that iteratively and a continuous muscle of focusing on the next level of improvement, the next level of addition to this that makes things just a little bit better, a little bit more rigorous, a little bit happier customers. Those are the things you've like focusing on the why as well as the how matters a bit. So there are your traditional sort of financial ROI type measures. For most of us, that's probably the least interesting part of it. Improvements in customer satisfaction, like art and field satisfaction, by the way. So do you have a happier field that has to do less manual repetitive work? Do you have a customer who with a very big company like Microsoft, does Microsoft feel a little bit smaller to them? And a little bit easier to navigate because of these additions that we've put in place. So we measure those things. And I think efficiency is probably more important than hard payback in many cases. So finding a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So just give me an example of the efficiency metrics that you look at. Is it time to close a case? Is it time to do a particular task? What do you focus on there?
Usually achievement towards the outcome. Like if we're trying to achieve a customer outcome, that's what we're measuring towards. And the speed and the velocity and the assurance with which we can try to do that matters the most. Typically, we find that anything that Microsoft cares about is usually a derivative of being able to do that with excellence. So there's secondary, obviously, we're tracking our own business performance, but those things are things that happen along with creating great customer outcomes and great customer velocity.
And when you say a customer outcome, just put some meat on the bone there for the audience in terms of, okay, I'm on the Azure platform, that's the product you care about, and customers are different, but what is an example outcome that you're tracking to?
Well, it could be multiple levels. So we have some customers that are working on us, and at various levels of the company that we work with might be thinking about us in very industry-specific ways across any of the industries that we work on. So retail is going to think a little bit differently than commercial banking is going to think about those outcomes. But business outcomes at that level are important for us to understand, track, and understand how well we're supporting those. At the same time, there are things like if a customer's a key part of that is migrating a data center and shifting from more traditional infrastructure to a more flexible cloud-focused one through Azure, well, how quickly I help them to do that in a resilient way and they have a business case around how they want to do this. So being able to help them to do that in a more expedient and risk-mitigated way is really important for us too. So one of the things that we bring via our customer success organization is that deep technical competence to be able to help them make great decisions and to speed up that as best we can. That's going to get them over. It's going to get their business case accomplished a little bit faster, and it's going to help Microsoft create some outcomes for our side as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go down this tangent a little bit on outcomes because I think it's important. And that is, if you think about software consumption models, right, and you have the license, okay, I pay for a license, maybe I'm using it, maybe I'm not using it. And then we said as an industry, and you guys were part of that, we said, hey, we're going to go to a consumption-based model. It's going to be about workloads. You only pay for what you're using, right? That's good. But then quickly, I was talking to John Jester, who used to be at Microsoft, and he was over at Google. And he said, yeah, Thomas, he goes, you get into a consumption-based model, and the customer quickly goes, okay, cool, I'm only paying for what I use, but what's the value of what I use? what's the So you get, ultimately, you truly do have to get to this outcome conversation that you were on there. And I would submit that as an industry, historically, we've actually been pretty shitty at that because we like to talk about business outcomes. We have a great marketing story there. Our websites tell great stories, but we really struggle to get the customer across the goal line on a business outcome. And I do believe that that is changing. I mean, I really do believe for a lot of different reasons that ultimately, if you want to keep margin and value on the table, you're really going to have to do what you're talking about, which is what is the business use case they signed up for that they're trying to get. And we got to be tracking to that because it doesn't matter how much workload was involved here if they did not get the outcome. So it's sort of a new era on that.
You have to avoid counting beans. One of the things that we ask our field teams to do very often is make sure that they're reconnecting with their customers around what those outcomes are. Things change, customer executives and key stakeholders change and expand sometimes. So making sure that conversation stays fresh, but also that everything that we do from a customer success perspective is strongly linked to those things. Yep. So all of those, and you get a little bit further down the chain for, a data center migration is typically going to have a cost savings target. But the underlying theme there is that cost savings target and that data center migration sets up and ladders to a substantially higher level business outcome that they're trying to create of a more agile business or that enable something to move a little bit faster, a little better.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So, you mentioned efficiency earlier. And so I have to click on this one here, which is sort of the impact of AI on just our headcount engines within tech companies. And I am already of the belief that, we are going to be managing more revenue with less people. I just don't think there's any doubt about that. I think AI takes out 20 to 30% of headcount. It just means that we might be able to slow or flatten hiring and still bring on more customers and more revenue. And I'm just curious, what do you see there as we go forward?
Well, I can tell you how we think about it and how many of our customers that share they're thinking around this with us is that the majority, like almost two times, they're thinking about how they look to empower people with this technology rather than how they start to get aggressive about replacing people. It's much better to start thinking about how we can have a better customer experience, drive more out customers a little bit faster. But efficiency is always going to be a benefit from this.
Yeah.
And so that means you can do more as you scale with those same folks and hopefully do it a little bit faster, a little bit better for customers. So there's a double benefit here where you can start to see that AI creates a more efficient model, but at the same time, creating better customer outcomes and internal stakeholder outcomes at the same time.
So I'm going to be the candid voice here with the audience, and I've been beating this drum for a little while, but I think it's, again, important for the tech professionals that are listening. And that is, again, I don't think there's any doubt that AI is going to make us more efficient. And I don't think there's any doubt that this conversation about headcount efficiency is coming your way. I don't care if you run customer success, support, sales. I was just talking to a CRO the other day. He said, look, we just had our board meeting. I've got to reduce my cost of sales by 20%. The assumption is I make that up in AI capabilities. I don't know where yet. That conversation is coming to everybody. And so I think if we just say, hey, this is all about just making people more productive and happier, and it's rainbows and it's unicorn, I think that you're kind of kidding yourself as a leader if the efficiency part of it isn't squarely on the table. And I just think that everyone's got to get their arms around that, because again, as a company, if you're not getting those efficiencies, my feeling is 3 to 5 years from now, you are completely uncompetitive. Your cost structure is just completely out of whack.
One of the things I'd talk about with my own team, Thomas, is I don't think that AI is, or these capabilities are anywhere close to replacing managers per se. But we do know that the managers that leverage these tools and capabilities will absolutely outcompete the ones that don't.
Yep.
It's just without question.
And that's why, again, I think as a tech professional, you really have to lean into this and understand what the use cases are. You got to understand where the technology is going, because if you just, I have spoken to leadership teams that are like, you know, I'm just going to wait for like the Microsofts and the Salesforces of the world to figure it out and tell me what to do with the technology. I don't think that's the winning move. I think right now you've got to be leaning into it as a professional and understanding, you know, okay, some of this stuff is not there yet. Some of it is already there, and really have your finger on the pulse of this, because again, otherwise you're going to wake up 3 years from now just incredibly flat-footed in terms of your, you know, your cost. So I'm going to give you one final question here. I'm watching the clock. You know, we're researching the difference between what I'll call a traditional tech company and an AI native company. And this is a company that basically every workflow in their company, they just think first about how AI is going to be applied to it, right? And most companies are clearly not there yet. But how do you think tech companies like Microsoft, how are they going to operate differently than how we used to operate as tech companies?
It's a fascinating thing to think about, because, you know, if you flash back 20 years, the notion of a cloud first company hadn't even been born yet. So what's changed as we start to look at the things that were unlocked, the technical capabilities, the operating capabilities that were posed as a part of that transition? You know, AI becomes one of those topics that I don't know that we've seen the outer edges of what that AI native company even looks like yet. What we do know is that the connectivity between the data and the core operating of the company and the customer starts to look a lot smaller.
I totally agree with that.
And the speed and agility with which they can sense change internally and externally becomes a lot more rapid.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really fascinating to watch the shape of this take hold.
Yeah. And what you just described there, I mean, so what I would, again, what I'd assert here is, you know, the difference between a traditional on-prem software company and a born in the cloud company, and I've been studying this for 20 years, is actually not that different, to be honest with you. And what do I mean by that? You had product teams that would, you know, come up with the technology, you throw it over the fence to sales, sales would sell something, then service had to figure out how to get that right. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry, Salesforce is a mini me of Oracle. I mean, in many ways, it is what it is, right? AI is different. AI is different because I think what you just described there, this closing of the gap between what the product does and how it's being used and how it adds value, and that intimacy with the customer goes like this. So we don't have this fire brigade handoff of product over to, you know, marketing, over to sales, over to, you know, over to services. It's much more intimate. And I think it is going to fundamentally change in a really positive way that relationship between technology providers and you know, their customers. And I was just reading a story still to this day. They basically, you know, 2019 study by McKinsey, 50% historically, 50% of technology projects fail to get the ROI. 50%. Now, let's think about that, David. You've been in tech for a while. That's freaking embarrassing. We're in an industry that half the time, if we were baseball players, you know, batting average, we'd be pretty happy with that. That's abysmal. And we've been getting away with that for decades. And I think that is going to go away. I don't think it's going to be 50%. I think we're going to be hitting, you know, getting on base here with customers and getting their outcomes, you know, 80, 90, 100% of the time. I think it's going to be super exciting.
Well, cycles will be so much faster too. So the notion of being able to experiment more readily, be able to get things out to market a lot faster. If you look at the AI capabilities within our developer platforms, that's just making the product development cycle that much easier, that much faster.
Absolutely.
And as you said before, sort of connection between that and customers starts to create a lot faster cycles in how those things iterate.
Yep.
And they become higher velocity and more agile.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, and again, we're on this journey to make sure we're separating hype from reality. And there is so much hype of AI, but I actually believe that in some ways there's not enough hype. I don't think people are internalizing enough how this is going to change again the way we operate internally as tech companies, just changing all of our workflows in really positive ways. I think it's a super exciting time for sure. And I really appreciate you coming in and sharing your insights on it from, again, one of the, you know, the premier companies out there on this topic. And so it's really great to get your you know, perspective for the audience. And I always close here with the question of the day. So I'm going to ask our listeners the same question I've been asking for quite a while here. How many AI use cases have you deployed? For the sake of your career and your company, I hope the answer isn't zero. Cheers, everybody.